True wealth isn't just what you earn. It's the life you live and the legacy you leave. Welcome to Money Sense, where we've spent over 30 years helping people plan for their finances, their health, and the story they want to tell.
Welcome to Money Sense. This is Jamie Williams, Wealth Advisor with Ellen Becker Investment Group. Today, I'm joined by a friend of Ellen Becker, Dick Schiller. Thanks for joining me, Dick.
Thanks, Jamie. Thanks for having me.
So, Dick, you've been working with us now for several years, and also you have another member of your team that I'll let you share a little bit about that if you like. But do you care to share just a little bit about what your strategy outlook is for what you do and how you help us?
Certainly. Yeah. So Pavlik Investment Advisors has been partnering with Ellen Becker Investment Group for going on 10 years now. The relationship actually started in 2016 with my now retired partner, Terry Pavlik, and Karen Ellen Becker. And it's been going strong for 10 years to the day. Yes, like you mentioned, Terry Pavlik retired at the end of 2025. And really almost simultaneously, Pavlik Investment Advisors acquired our office suite mates. We had two other investment managers that were sharing office space with us. So the best thing about it is that it brought another CFA to the staff. So it's myself and Bill Warnke, two CFAs that are closely monitoring all fixed income bond positions for Ellen Becker. So that is really where our focus is. It's that direct bond holdings of fixed income securities.
That's excellent. Congratulations on everything happening. That transition sounds, you know, really positive for you.
Thank you. It's been a busy start to the year, but all in a good way.
Excellent. So today we're going to dive in a little bit. We got quite a bit we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about, you know, obviously the fixed income space, but Dick, I also know that you are a student of the markets overall and have a great deal of knowledge just across, you know, all classes, if you will, different investment types and themes. Also, we want to talk about a little bit of what's happened in the markets over the last, say, couple of years and as we move into 2026. And then we're going to talk a little bit about quality, too, and what it means to be invested in a manner that's consistent with your objectives and how you should be thinking about that. So, before we jump in, just kind of share a couple of high-level items. You know, fascinating, the S&P 500 hit 37 all-time record highs last year in 2025. The year prior, coming off of 2024, 57. So in the last 2 years, we've experienced something close to almost 100 all-time highs in the S&P. Projections were that we would finish somewhere around 6,600 in the S&P last year, and we almost crested at 7,000. So really just a solid market. We're going to dig in a little bit as to what drove that. And then in April of last year, I think that had our attention because we saw the second fastest bear market in history, third worst drawdown since the global financial crisis, and in October of 1990. So pretty amazing that we finished the year the way we did. Also, you know, I want to maybe have you weigh in on this, but international is something that we did not expect to see over or outperform international and emerging markets finishing in the mid 30%. So with that, let's kind of jump in. Dick, you know, the Dow, 19 all-time record highs. What are your general thoughts right now about last year and then kind of where we sit today?
Yeah, definitely. Like you described, Jimmy, I mean, if you were just to, I like using the phrase, when in doubt, zoom out, and you close your eyes and you mention some of those statistics that you mentioned, basically 100 all-time highs in the last 2 years. That's pretty astonishing, and I don't think was on many people's bingo card. Definitely wasn't on mine. I mean, I feel like we have just totally climbed a wall of worry, and, you know, that's not totally uncommon. Generally, when there's no worry out there, when everything's just rosy, everyone thinks everything's going to go to the moon, that's technically when we generally have some problems out there in the market. So that wall of worry, I'd say, is still there today, maybe a little bit less so. The tariff issues seem to reside a little bit. You know, and economically things are still, you know, relatively soft, which is an interesting dynamic when you compare that to the stock market statistics, right? We stocks have just been up and to the right, but we are starting to see unemployment tick up a little bit into that mid fours range. Job growth has been pretty slow. Inflation has come down, but is still well above the Fed's 2% target. So there's never a dull moment out there, but especially now it's an incredibly interesting time because, you know, I'm not jealous of the new Fed chair coming in. I'm not envious of Jerome Powell
that's a
either.
Tough job.
Very, very tough job. I don't know what I would do in their shoes because they have a balancing act to follow here. But that's what I think is most interesting is there's a little bit of a dichotomy between the Main Street economy and the stock market. They're kind of showing two different things.
Let's talk about that for a second. So we've got the current interest rate environment. Rates are sitting at between 3.5 and 3.75. We've come down. I think we had, two or three rate cuts last year?
Yes.
And there's a lot of uncertainty as to, obviously, with Powell, now his term is up, and they've named his successor. So if rate cuts are going to occur, what were your thoughts on when that would transpire?
Yeah, well, I believe Powell's term ends in May, and I think any movement before or before that would just get a ton of scrutiny. So my guess is, unless something really jarring happens, if it's just kind of status quo like what we've been seeing, he's probably going to stay still until the summer, until after May, and not push through any more rate cuts. The position is appointed by the administration, so there's no doubt that that Trump has a hand in this and his staff. I also think that, you know, although the Fed has to be independent, I think it's no surprise if you read between the lines that the person he's putting in there will likely favor more rate cuts to come. Mm-hmm. So, and it's a tough spot because rate cuts, you know, stokes the economy, right? So we give gasoline to the fire, if you will, and it sparks inflation, and the inflation is not where the Fed really wants it to be. We've come a far way down from 9% where it was in 2022 down to 3, but 3 is also not 2.
It's not the target.
It's not the target, right. And some people say, well, move the target. And I don't know if I am on board with that. You know, I think it would help a lot of Main Street in America to have
interest rates. There's so many factors, right?
Totally, to have some lower interest rates. So I still expect, you know, 2 rate cuts. So like you said, that brings that Fed funds rate from like 3.5 down to 3. You know, how does that impact you, our listeners? That directly impacts the rate of return on the money market fund. You know, on Schwab right now, that value advantage is around 3.5. I'd expect that to be 3.0% by the end of the year.
We talk about that often in the sense that those are the types of risks that we, you know, we're looking at. We're trying to diversify away from risk. Reinvestment rate risk, interest rate risk, those are two very prevalent things. I don't think people really understand if they put money into a bank CD or in some sort of fixed income instrument and they hold it for a period of time, say 6 months or a year, and then of course they go to the bank or they look at the rates and say, where are we at? They're not as happy about that, right? Because they're trying to mitigate some of those lower returns. With that being the case, I do want to weigh in on what your thoughts are on high-quality corporate investment-grade bonds and what the yield to maturities are looking like right now. And if maybe you just want to start by explaining, you know, what is a bond?
Yeah.
And then we could kind of talk about where that puts rates now versus where we were before the great inflation.
It's funny you mention that on CDs because just in the last few months, we've had a few clients come to us with CDs maturing. And they're generally the clients that have done this for, you know, 20, 30 years. They go back to their generally smaller local bank because they pay a little higher than the Chases of the world. And they say, you know, what used to be a 4 is now a 3%. And, you know, they used to offer me 13 months and now they're offering me 6 months. You know, the time duration has shortened up. And if you ask, well, why is that? I think the common assumption is that rates are going lower, right? So the bank doesn't want to make a loan lock in a loan for 3 years They want to say, you know, we'll give you your money back in 6 months, right? And that's mm-hmm. that reinvestment rate risk that you were talking about. So the client's question is, hey, you know, I'm a little irritated with that low rate and shorter duration on time. What else can I be doing? And that's where that investment grade bond portfolio and a ladder can really come in to help. One, I mean, get you higher returns, and two, lock them in higher for longer. So let's put some numbers behind that. On the shortest end of the yield curve, looking out a year, we've been actively buying bonds for clients at about 4.0%. Is it that much higher than the money market fund? 3.5 to 4. It's 50 basis points higher. Is it that much higher than CDs? I think it definitely is. And then also, you know, just think the CD issue. You have to go get another 1099. You have to physically interact with your banker. You have to do some legwork and get tax forms and be rolling those CDs. You know, when you have that all in-house with Ellen Becker, having your advisor look over it, that's all done for you, right? Mm-hmm. So I think there's a little bit of a, you know, a client may have to let go of the reins a little bit, but then realize like, oh, wow, you know, that's what I have these advisors for, right? And they can boost return in excess of what the CD rate is. If you look out going further down the maturity yield curve, it's a pretty positively sloped, which is a good sign, a normal shaped yield curve ranging from 4 on the short end. And if we go out 10 years and creating our traditional 10-year ladder, we've been able to get about 5.5% with some triple B, Baa2 with Moody's. Really what we view as a conservative risk return yield at about 5.5% in the out years. So from 4% on the low end to 5.5% on the going out 10 years. And again, that's you're buying that bond 10 years out. You're expecting to earn, you know, coupon payments of roughly 5.5% per year for the next 10 years, right? And that's with compound interest, it's actually not 10 times 5.5. It's generally a little more than that. So that's where we see the yield curve today.
Planning a vacation this year? Before you take off, make sure you understand whether travel insurance should be part of your plan. Join Ellen Becker Investment Group on March 12th from noon to 1:30 p.m. for a live educational webinar with our insurance liaison, Evan Brown. He'll walk you through the key types of travel insurance, what your policy actually covers and why it matters, common exclusions, and how to evaluate costs before you buy. Learn more and register through the link in our show notes.
Welcome back to Money Sense. This is our podcast today. I'm here with Dick Schiller. And with that, before we took a quick break there, we were talking about the current yield of corporate investment grade bonds, which on a 1 year to 10 year basis, which we build 10-year ladders for our clients, is as far out as 5.5%. That's fantastic. The 10-year U.S. Treasury has been hovering in around somewhere around 4.2, I think. Has that, that hasn't moved really much, I don't think. The higher for longer story, right?
Correct, yeah. You know, and we've messaged that higher for longer. We still continue to believe that's going to be the case. We had the jump. What really spurred this was the jump in inflation and interest rates moved alongside that back starting in 2022. And since then, you know, we've, like you mentioned, we've been in this range of between 4 and 4.5 on the 10-year U.S. Treasury. So you can go out, buy a 10-year T-bill, right, and get 4.2%. And we're looking to earn a little bit more, right? So that 5.5% is directly comparable to the 4.2%. And where we view, we're not taking on excessive risk, but to earn, you know, 4.2 versus 5.5, when you're looking at big dollars, it adds up and it more than compensates for any advisor fees as well on top of that.
Not to mention the income we collect along the way for that, right? Because that's kind of the idea.
So exactly.
Let's tie that in, because when we talk about what a bond is, which is a fixed income instrument that you're essentially buying a small piece of a company's debt, or that could be a government or a municipality or things of that nature. But we're really referring to primarily as corporates, right? And that, if we're looking at a 60-40 portfolio, that would be the 40%, right? Let's talk about the other part of that portfolio, the 60%, which is a pretty common theme when you hear people talk about portfolio construction, the 60-40. By the way, last year, a typical 60-40 did north of 11% for the year, which was fantastic. But let's talk about the stock side of that. And we mentioned earlier the performance of the S&P. Do you have any initial thoughts on what primary factors drove the S&P performance last year?
Yes. Looking to last year, if you look at the market and total stock returns, we have a couple moving variables. We have one, earnings growth. Two, we have dividend yield. And then three, we have a change in a multiple paid for those cash flows. And what drove the majority of that return, if you want to look at the S&P 500, something in the upper double digits, closer to 17%, the majority of it was actually earnings growth. Mm. And where was that earnings growth? The earnings growth came from largely big tech companies like NVIDIA, like Microsoft, like Apple, some of these really cash flow generating machines. I feel like we've been saying this maybe for over 3 years now, so about as long as we've been doing this podcast for. But you know, they continue to be the stars. Coming into the year, they were more high expensive, high multiple stocks, and they remain that. But the earnings growth, you know, if you grow earnings, let's just say 15%, NVIDIA, obviously a lot higher than that, you're going to work your multiple down lower over time because your denominator, your earnings,
sure,
is going up. So it's really important to kind of look at a trailing PE ratio and then maybe look at a forward because you're incorporating the future growth of that. So it was a great year for stocks. The main difference between stock investing and bond investing is we're not worried about that multiple expansion or contraction factor within fixed income. Like, our focus is one thing and one thing only. Are we going to get paid back? Like, you make a loan to an individual, to a corporation, you expect to collect interest and get paid back. We're not worried about the price being paid for that loan because our objective is to hold all bonds to maturity. And that's why we stay short to maturity. So, you know, and that's a great balanced portfolio where we can offer on the fixed income side, you know, and 5.5 on the long end, 4 on the short end. So a weighted average, mm-hmm, closer to 4.75, you know, that's a pretty good return. I think most retirees, you know, if they have a large enough nest egg, if they have other sources of income like Social Security, you can start building a portfolio of, you know what, I don't need to take all the risk of the roller coaster ride of the stock market to be able to create a decent return. Really, our goal of the fixed income is to be the security. I don't want anyone to think we're going to make more money than the stock guys over time. We're just not, right?
And
we don't plan it. That's not the goal.
Fundamentally, it won't work that way.
Exactly. Yep. Exactly. And, you know, stocks will be bonds over the long term and bonds will be cash over the long term. The question is just, and this works with your advisor for every single client, and it's a unique equation for every single client of where does that client fall within that risk tolerance spectrum.
And we always kind of frame it with what is the, you know, prescribed allocation for a client's goals. When you talk about getting returns that might be what I would consider to be really good today, compared to when we were, what, back in early 2020, before COVID, we were like 2% or 1.5%, and now we're, you know, between 4 and 5, which is fantastic. But when we think about planning and quality, you know, we always like to tie it back into what do you need? What do you need to meet the goal? What's our expected return? What's our required rate of return to meet the goal? So it's nice to think about swinging for the fences and getting these great, you know, stock returns from the top 10 in the S&P, which are comprised primarily of tech. I want to talk about gold in a minute because that's kind of an interesting story. But nonetheless, that 60-40 is where we go back to what Ellenbecker considers its five pillars of investment strategy. You know, it's kind of our investment philosophy. Quality and diversification are two of those five. You know, let me ask you this. When it comes to the S&P 500, there are 10 companies that concentrate the top 40%. What do you think as a point in time today, is that healthy, or do you have any concerns about that?
Yeah, I definitely have some concerns about that. That said, you mentioned earlier in the podcast that those companies are driving the large preponderance of earnings growth and cash flow. So, you know, I think a lot of people look to make comparisons to the 01, 02 period, the tech bubble that burst. And yes, it's technology leading the market today, but it's also, I think if you go back and look at some of the companies that were really driving the market returns, first of all, the multiples were in the hundreds. You know, we say Apple, Microsoft expensive at 30, but it's not in the hundreds. And second of all, there were a lot of returns. Why those multiples were in the hundreds was because they weren't generating a lot of earnings. They weren't generating a lot of cash. The E factor was fairly low relative to the price paid. Those companies have dominated over the last 3 years. That's driven that high concentration. Generally, in an average year, we actually have 3-5% corrections or more per year. So in an average, in a normal year, there's a 75% chance we have a 10% correction, right? So more often than not, we're going to have a 10% correction. And we've seen that, you know, historically going back even just in the most recent years. Yep. So my belief, when people look at, you know, the indices, right, as you know, the S&P, the Dow, the Russell, what's going to really drive, I mean, one, the NASDAQ and the S&P are going to be the performance of those tech companies. And, you know, they just reported earnings too, and they were strong, right? But the movement was the multiple. So the price investors are willing to pay for those companies came down, right? Because earnings were going up, but the stock prices went down. So investors were paying less for that. And I see that really as the biggest risk, maybe, you know, behind that, maybe something geopolitical occurring, maybe something in the oil or commodity markets mm-hmm. occurring. But if there's a negative sentiment for AI and AI-related names, you know, there's going to be a decent amount of pain in an index like the S&P 500.
We're going to see it because it just comprises such a large amount. But with that being the case, you know, Mag 7, we finally, you know, started talking a little bit about AI, the AI story over the last few years, dominated investment headlines. Obviously, it's been a profound evolution of sorts in terms of, you know, an industrial revolution, I believe is what people are calling it. And I think everybody that I know, it's had some element or something that they've been using in their own lives. So with that, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, I do want to ask you a little bit about some of the commodities and other things too.
We have some exciting news. Ellenbecker Investment Group is officially launching our brand new program, The Wealth Seed. This program is designed to give you high-quality financial guidance tailored to your stage of saving, no matter your experience level. As part of this program, you'll get a growing library of short, easy-to-understand financial podcasts, monthly educational emails, interactive workshops, and curated tools like book and media recommendations, all created to help you build confidence and clarity around your finances. Plant your wealth seed today and start growing with us at ellenbecker.com/thewealthseed.
Welcome back to Money Sense. This is Jamie Williams, Wealth Advisor with Ellenbecker Investment Group. And today I'm joined by Dick Schiller with Pavlik Investment Advisors. And Dick, before the break, we were talking about quite a few things, concepts related to the stock market, performance, concentration, earnings. But I did want to mention gold, you know, and silver. The two are kind of together. Obviously, we could go further into commodities, but those two, I think, have caught a lot of people's attention. I read this morning that gold was up 64% in 2025, and it got a lot of people's attention. So do you have any initial thoughts on that? And just for the record, the commodities are a very specialized investment place for people to consider. And I certainly wouldn't call myself out as an expert in commodity trading or precious metals. But I will say that I really understand how people invest in physical gold and silver, and it's kind of inefficient, really. I mean, there's a lot of risks to that when you own it and you have to put it in a safe or, you know, hold it somewhere. There are instruments out there that people can purchase within, you know, the stock market. They trade on exchanges. They're called exchange-traded funds. But I think that's part of what might be driving a lot of this is the ease of access and ability to own it. But I'm more concerned about upside, downside outlook. So any thoughts on that?
Yeah, totally. It's been absolutely fascinating to watch. I mean, these are some big, big price movements, right? You mentioned 64%. It's only February today, and I feel like we've gone through 10 years of volatility in the gold and silver markets just in the first 6 weeks of the year. You know, leading up to what was a sellout. I think silver is down about 30%, gold a little less than that. But even after that, on that Friday, when the commodities just took an absolute beating, they were still up year to date. So really pretty miraculous that to start the year, some of these commodities were up 30, 40, 50%. They do retreat back that amount. To still be up positive year to date is something to really make note of. You know, we talked a lot about balance, 60-40 diversification. That type of volatility is not something that we're like chasing. It reminds me a little bit of Bitcoin, right, and cryptocurrencies. And by the way, there we're in a 30-40% drawdown from all-time highs.
Yep.
Does it hold a place in people's portfolios? Sure. I think if you have a client that's particularly more risk-seeking and not risk-averse, just from a volatility perspective, right? There are a lot of opinions on the metals, on cryptocurrencies. And, you know, I'm honestly still trying to figure them out, just like I think we all are, just like I think all investors are. If you just look at, though, the market performance, or they have been up and to the right, right? To be honest, I wish I bought 100 Bitcoin 10 years ago and forgot about it, but didn't forget my password. That sounds like a nightmare. but anyway, if you're willing to take the volatility of those markets, I think having a couple percent position in those areas is fine. And the question you have to ask yourself is, if this goes, you know, it has an 80% crash, you know, maybe doesn't go to zero, but has an 80% crash, will you still be okay? Will you be on track to meet your long-term goals? And, you know, if you look at the stock market, you know, great financial crisis was a 45 to 50% crash, you know, the worst crash since the Great Depression. And, you know, even there, right? That's not a crash to shy away from, right? That's material. People felt that in 07 to 09. But, you know, here in the crypto space and right now in gold, we're seeing some 30 to 50% crashes every year.
Always a bubble somewhere.
There is. So it's fascinating.
There's always a correction somewhere.
There is. And as you get high highs, that the volatility works both ways, right? So it's gone up to the extreme exponentially, if you will, and it's also comes down just as fast. The other thing I think a lot of people like to tie to maybe the gold, silver, to the printing presses of the U.S. government. There was a lot of push from the current administration to be more efficient from government spending. You know, it doesn't get the headlines anymore. You know, Doge was pretty prevalent in 2025. But the reality is, and we had talked about this when we had those election in-person and webinars, which I thought were awesome, to talk about a subject that's really a hot-button subject that's a little bit hard to talk about in our shoes. You know, our position was, you know, the Doge might make a scratch, but it's not going to make a dent in the level of spend that the government has, especially with the big, beautiful bill. Ultimately, that's tax cuts that people will see coming back when they file their taxes really in these next couple months here. But that spending and the debt levels haven't subsided, right? They've continued to go up. And again, that's not, Republicans aren't great at it, and neither are Democrats, right? So it's really a political agnostic comment, but, you know, has that driven the rapid price of gold and silver? And I think it has a little bit. I think if anything, you know, this is all a sentiment play, right? So investors are seeing this and they're saying, you know, how do I diversify away? You know, the dollar seems to be going down. Government spending is out of control. No one on either side of the political party wants to put an end to it. So they say, well, I'm going to go buy gold and Bitcoin. And I think that's really added to the volatility in those two specific areas.
Yeah, I also would mention that back in the late 70s and early 80s, people were really, really gung-ho about buying gold. And there was early 80s, the bubble mania, the gold bubble mania really happened. And it took really all the way until 2020 to kind of recover from that.
Mm-hmm.
There was just a really long period of time. If you look at an inflation-adjusted return graph that shows, you know, the prices, obviously inflation-adjusted means everything in that respect. But keeping in mind, too, that commodities don't pay dividends.
Right. There's no cash flow.
Well, that's very good. Thank you, Dick, for sharing that. You know, I think what we really would like to do is kind of spend our last time together here, you know, talking about defining quality in our portfolios and really kind of bringing it back to planning. You know, when you kind of sit down and look at, you know, kind of the bonds that you are looking to acquire in the portfolio, what are some of the first things that come to mind for you? And then what are kind of high level core requirements for you when you look at investing in high quality?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, cash flow, first and foremost, is really number one, right? So you make a loan to someone, you want to make sure that they have the cash flow to be able to pay you back. And looking at, you know, different debt metrics, such as debt service coverage ratios, right? You know, this is your debt that they're owed. Well, how many times could they pay that twice? Could they pay that three times? Could they pay that four times? We can look at, not to get too technical, but like a net debt over EBITDA. So EBITDA, measure of cash flow, net debt being the level of cash less the amount of cash on hand, right? There's some companies out there that, especially the large cap tech companies, that have either more cash than debt or a very close match between cash and debt. And, you know, think of it, I mean, bringing it personal. Let's say you have a mortgage of $100,000, but you also have $100,000 of cash in the bank. That's probably a pretty safe bet, I would say, that you're going to be paid back with interest. If anything else, you might be paid back early. All right. It really boils down to cash flow. The beautiful thing about bond investing is we're not really focused on that multiple expansion or contraction. You know, another way of looking at sentiment out in the market place. So yeah, and you know, you mentioned planning. Just to tie that analysis back to planning, we know what we know, and that's, you know, spending to the extent that we can. Obviously, there are one-time things that are going to come up, but we can have a good guesstimate of where spending is going to be for the year, and therefore, you know, offset that by what's coming in, right? Whether that be job, income, you know, pensions, Social Security, and then try to fill the gap, right? So let's build a portfolio where we can really withstand any sort of market correction, right? And the goal is to have the client be like, you know what, even if stocks drop 20%, we're still going to be okay, right? Because I have X amount in money market fund that's generating this amount in cash. I have Y amount in the investment grade bond portfolio that's generating this. You know, for fun, I own silver and gold, and, you know, I get a little excited about chasing Bitcoin. So my recommendation is always keep it single digit percentages. It's just in case, right? We've seen them drop 80%, right? We don't want it to dent that overall plan. And then the rest of the pile, you know, throw it in the market, right? We have great partners at Allen Becker that are investing in stocks. There's passive products out there that can really be an anchor to the portfolio. And just know there's going to be ups and downs. But, you know, like we said earlier in the show, longer term, the stock portfolios are going to outperform cash and bonds.
I was going to ask you, too, when you think about investing individual bonds, which is your area of expertise, versus buying a bond, you know, like ETF or mutual fund, just what are the key, like the very top differences, or maybe the biggest risk that would be involved with that?
Yeah, certainly. So the majority of bond ETFs and mutual funds out there have a much longer duration, think 8 to 10 years. And duration another way to look at that is the average length to maturity. So if you have a 10-year ladder with 10% coming due every single year, well, you have one bond that's coming due within the year. You have another bond that's coming due within 2 years. Your average length to maturity is less than 5 years. Generally, it comes out to 4.5 to 4.7 years. So by having a shorter time to duration, that limits your interest rate risk. And we saw that, I mean, really front and center in 2022, right? Yeah. When COVID, the 10-year was at 0.5%, then post-COVID inflation hit in 22, and then all of a sudden we had a 10-year above 5, right? So yeah. From 0.5 to 5.0% on the 10-year. And that threw a lot of those, I mean, the Bloomberg Aggregate Bond Index is just getting back to break even, right? Since that time period in 2022, right? That was 4 years ago. And so that's by creating a bond ladder with direct investment grade bonds, we're able to fully customize that per the client. Right. Let's say they want a 3-year ladder, a 5-year ladder. Our standard is a 10-year ladder because I think that is a good starting point. But we can even further customize that for every single client and really match the plan, match the needs, and then also incorporate that risk tolerance question. Right. Some clients want to be more risk averse, and some clients want to be more risk seeking.
And with respect to the quality and that area of the portfolio being really a core, right? When we do those 10-year ladders, we're being very thoughtful about when those maturities come due. Does it make sense to reinvest those maturities at the long end of the curve? Or do we use it right now for current spending? Or maybe with the markets, there might be another, I guess, mindset or strategy involved with that. One thing I did want to mention too is that we talked earlier about what people's required returns are in order to be successful with their goals. When we sit down with our clients, we don't, as we're planning, we use software that, you know, our team has been really trained well on in terms of how to use it well. And it's not just a simple throw out a number, right? Like, we want our clients to put some thought into this. So, and when we put the bond and stock portfolios together and we run scenarios, the last thing we want is for a client that's 2 years out from retirement to stop and think about, well, hey, the market's down. Do I have to keep working? So we're constantly stress testing these portfolios and looking at providing downside protection. And I think that's really important because our teams that we work with our clients, we want to have 5 to 6 years of income protected. And that predominantly is inside of the fixed income or bond portfolios that you're managing for us.
Totally. The biggest nightmare scenario, I mean, the client relationships that keep me up at night are, we hit a tariff turmoil correction, we hit a 20-30%, and the client just says, I can't stomach this. I can't take any more. The market's down 30%. It's gonna go down 50%. I know it. You know, get me out of stocks and buy bonds and cash. And you know, at the end of the day, it is the client's money. I'm sure you and I would make recommendations to say, you know, we actually should kind of be thinking about using that bond maturity to buy stocks at these levels, right? They're on sale. You know, the stock market's the only store in America. When it goes on sale, everyone runs out of the store. And
that's true.
Just it's a little bit of a reverse psychology to try to fight that. But that's why you have advisors for, right? I think some of the biggest value add we can be are more emotional, psychological coaches, right? Because money is emotional, especially when we have some volatility, right? Which I'd expect to see more in 26.
It's at everyone's livelihood, right? And making sure that we're staying on the path. And it's those times of volatility or periods of inflection in the market where we, you know, it's where we do our jobs.
Exactly.
You know, educating clients and helping them along the way. And that's where, when we kind of look at our philosophy, we have our 5 investment pillars, which a couple of those we've talked about today already. The highest of quality, where we're at, right? We can't always, you know, say we're going to get the best exact investment, but we're going to pick the best of the investments available out there. Diversification, we want to make sure that we're transparent with our clients in terms of what they're paying. You know, I've read books and talk to people that have spent a lot of time discussing and analyzing different investment products that are complex And as a result of complexity comes costs. We like to try to keep things very simple. And then really the two other ones I mentioned earlier are income protection. And then one of the main ones is planning around taxes. So, you know, kind of breaking things down in a sense that allows us to plan for legacy, to plan for what's happening now, and then what's happening for a nice period of duration during, say, like a retirement period. And that's what we do. We're really helping our clients figure out how to have enough confidence and retire to the right things rather than retire from making money and then not figuring out how to retire comfortably or with a plan, right? So any final thoughts or anything, Dick, that you'd like to share about the year ahead with the markets?
Yeah, no, I thought, you know, you nailed it on the head, and what you just described is what is the most rewarding part of this job. Prior, I used to manage money for institutions, foundations. There wasn't a person. There was a plan trustee, but there wasn't a family, a real family you were taking care of on the other side of the table, and that's what makes what we do so special. So, yeah, as for 26, you know, buckle up. I think we're going to see a little bit more volatility than we did maybe the last 2 years, but I know we'll withstand it. We'll get through it. We've been through a lot of this together, so there will be more bear markets and there will be more bull markets. So
that's right. These will be. Thank you, Dick, for everything today. And as always, we thank you all for listening to our podcast. And if you enjoyed our show, please reach out to Ellen Becker. Our number is 262-691-3200. And we hope that we've made a positive difference in your outlook and financial well-being. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Money Sense, brought to you by Ellen Becker Investment Group. If you found today's conversation helpful, we encourage you to share it with a friend or family member, and be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts so you never miss an episode. At Ellen Becker Investment Group, we believe that education is the foundation of confident financial decisions. That's why we're proud to bring you insights from experienced professionals to help you build true wealth beyond just money. Please know, this podcast is intended for general informational purposes only and does not constitute personalized financial advice. Before making any financial decisions, we recommend consulting with a qualified advisor who understands your unique situation. For more resources, visit ellenbecker.com. We'll be back soon with more insights to help you live with clarity and confidence.